Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 189 for February 28th, 2009. Coming up in a few minutes.
The final winners, what a spread. I mean, this year has been incredible. I've just been pretty impressed.
That's Whiskey Magazine editor Rob Allinson. This is Whiskey Live Weekend in London, and the magazine presented its annual Icons of Whiskey Awards on Thursday night. We'll get the winners from Rob in a few minutes, and John Glazer of Compass Box will join us to share his salve for the Recession, a special whiskey available only at Whiskey Live London. That's coming up in a few minutes, along with a special scoop from John Glazer that you'll hear about first here on Whiskey Cast. First, though, let's look at the news. The politicians have struck again. While the Obama administration's budget proposal for next year didn't include any increase in federal liquor taxes, state lawmakers in Kentucky ignored the objections of the bourbon industry and approved a new 6% sales tax on retail alcohol sales. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned the protest on the steps of the state capitol in Frankfort, where Wild Turkey master distiller Jimmy Russell dumped a bottle of bourbon on the steps in protest. The politicians have also struck in Scotland, where new laws on liquor sales have forced historic Scotland to stop selling whiskey miniatures at 16 of its properties, including St. Andrew's Castle and Linlithgow Palace. The National Trust for Scotland is doing the same at 3 of its properties as well. The Scottish government is requiring new licenses for liquor sales by September, and the Scotsman reports the cost of getting those licenses could cost up to £10,000 UK for each location the tourism agencies operate. Historic Scotland will obtain a license for Dallas Dew, the former distillery it now operates, as a museum. Let's focus on whiskey for a moment. The Balvenie has selected the casks for this year's vintage cask release. Maltmaster David Stewart had some help from members of the British Association of Beekeepers. They were looking for honey notes in the casks and found what they were looking for in two 31-year-old barrels. It'll be available in May. Pricing has not been set. There's also a limited edition release from Laphroaig. Just 1,400 bottles have been released of a 21-year-old Laphroaig expression. I've seen it in a couple of New York City retailers priced at $515 a bottle. McTeers in Glasgow held its semi-annual auction of rare whiskies this past week. Just a few of the highlights. A 6-bottle set of Springbanks sold for £3,700. The lot included malts 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, and 50 years old. A 1946 Macallan sold for £1,600, and a Macallan Royal Marriage bottle sold for £600. A rare 35-year-old Highland Park bottle to honor longtime Highland Distillers executive John Goodwin sold for £900. And I mentioned Dallas Dew earlier. A bottle from the last cask filled before the distillery closed in 1983 sold for £220. We're just a couple of weeks away from St. Patrick's Day, and Jameson Irish Whiskey has revamped its website just in time. But what may be the most complete website on Irish whiskey history has also just made its debut. The Ireland Whiskey Trail not only focuses on Ireland's working distilleries, but Heidi Donnellan spent time researching the distilleries that have faded into history and the bars that carry on their heritage.
Either there will be pubs that have a fantastic selection of Irish whiskies, or there will be pubs that have a history linked to whiskey distilling in the past in Ireland. So some of these pubs that people would never, ever find out about, unless they read about them on the Whiskey Trail, effectively.
There's a link to the Ireland Whiskey Trail site at the Whiskey Cast website, and we'll hear more from Heidi on the history of Irish whiskey in an upcoming episode. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. It's going to be a busy month. I'll be at the Whiskey Guild's Whiskey Classic Tasting this coming Thursday in Morristown, New Jersey. Listen for special coverage on the next episode of Whiskey Cast. Whiskey Live Belgium is March 13th through the 15th in Verviers. Ethan Kelly of the Brandy Library in New York City will teach a class on silent Scotch distilleries at the Astor Center on March 20th. John Hansel of Malt Advocate will host a whiskey tasting on March 23rd at DBA in New York. His tasting at Philadelphia's Monk's Cafe on the 9th is already sold out. One of my favorite events every year, if only for the grief I usually get trying to pronounce it, the Whiskey Festival Noord-Nederland in Groningen is March 27th through the 29th. The Whiskies of the World Expo in San Francisco is March 28th. Binney's in Chicago will hold its annual World of Whiskies Festival March 31st, the night before Malt Advocate's Whiskey Fest Chicago on April 1st. You'll find a complete calendar of events on the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com.
One of the highlights of Whiskey Live London is the annual Icons of Whiskey Awards. Whiskey Magazine handed out its annual awards on Thursday night. The competition includes three regional rounds, with winners already announced for Scotland and the U.S. I caught up with editor Rob Allinson on Friday after the awards ceremony, which included the third round of regional winners.
We did The World, which was presented last night as well, same time as the final Icons. So that's sort of whiskey-producing nations out with Scotland and America. So it's Canada, Japan, Belgium, all sorts of different places. Actually, it's quite it's a very interesting cast.
And who were the winners?
The winners for retailer single outlet was Celtic Whiskey and Versand in Germany. For whiskey retailer multiple outlet was Jeroboam's in England. The whiskey online retailer is the Whiskey Exchange in England. There wasn't anybody in the visitor attractions. In the brand innovator, it was Jean Donnet's company, the Celtic Whiskey Company in France. Who else did we have? Oh, the Whiskey Ambassador of the Year was Tetsuya Hitsumitsu in Fenica Whiskey Distilling Company. So that was it. That was the six rest of the world. And Nika also won the Distiller of the Year for the rest of the world. That was the six.
And I guess we should talk about the final winners then.
The final winners. What a spread. I mean, this year has been incredible. I've just been pretty impressive. They've been so vast, and I mean, the states have done very well this year, beating some impressive names in Scotland, to be honest.
So who were they?
Okay, the retail awards. So the single outlet, the winner was Gordon and MacPhail in Scotland. The retailer multiple outlets was Binney's in Chicago, and the retailer online was Sukinder at the Whiskey Exchange. And the Whiskey Visitor Attraction of the Year was won by Heaven Hill, the Bourbon Heritage Centre. The Brand Innovator of the Year was the Glenmorangie Company. We had a new category this year, which we decided that the guys under 35 who are out doing the ambassadorial jobs deserved an awful lot of recognition, and we'd never done this before. So Mark Watt from Duncan Taylor & Co. won the inaugural award. The Whiskey Ambassadors of the Year were the Whiskey Professors from Beam Global, the three guys. They came over last night. We had a blast together. It was good fun. The Distiller of the Year is Ben Reich Distillery Company. And we gave our Lifetime Achievement Award last night to David Stewart of William Grant & Sons.
A very very appropriate honor for David with 45 years plus in the industry.
Yeah, I know. Bless him, he's done an incredible job. And when you look at it, the amount of stuff he's, you know, been the brains behind and brought out is incredible. And he's so quiet and self-effacing. He's a great guy. He, you know, well deserved last night.
And you could say the same thing about Ben Reich too. They've done some very unusual things with whiskeys that have just been very stunning, but yet on a very subtle note.
Yeah, I mean, you know, quietly working away. There's what 18 of them up there under Billy Walker, and just you know, it's gone from a single 10-year-old expression up to, you know, 20 expressions covering peated and unpeated. I think we'll see sort of the output double from there in the next couple of years. And, you know, four years, it's now available in 20 markets, which, you know, in 2004, who really knew about it? So, you know, with Glendronach on board as well, I think we expect big things from these two distilleries in the next couple of years, I think.
They're going to wind up competing with themselves for the same award.
Very probably, yes. But it'd be good. It, you know, the stuff that's coming out there is, you know, all high quality, high level. You know, there's not a bad dram in there at all.
What other surprises did you see in the awards?
I mean, to be honest, the whiskey professors, that was probably the tightest category in the competition, because you had Tetsuya Hisamitsu from Nika Whiskey Company and Colin Scott of Shivers Brothers. And, you know, Colin's been in the business for quite a long time, well-respected. So on paper, you look at it and you would have thought, you know, Colin would have nailed it. And I was talking with the guys last night, and they said the same thing. So, and that went right down to the wire. That was neck and neck for quite a while. But it was good, you know. Good that the guys got the recognition for what they do.
Did you name a whiskey bar of the year this year?
No, we didn't do that this year. That's going to be coming out later this year as a separate publication. We decided just to concentrate on, you know, the people and place this time. And I know, you know, bars are places, but we really wanted to sort of separate them out and make them stand on their own this year.
And you've got a big weekend going on up there, don't you?
We certainly do. We're in the middle of set up at the moment, aiming for a 5 o'clock start. And the place here is just phenomenal. If you were at Whiskey Life New York 2 years ago at the Chelsea, at the Piers there, it's like that here. It's got that same sort of feeling to it. It's quite upmarket, very swanky. And to be honest, I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be hard slog, but we've already sold out Saturday. You cannot get in here on Saturday now. There's no tickets left. So it's going to be good. It's going to be very good.
And you guys are really expanding the Whiskey Live franchise literally all over the world this year. I know there's a lot more events in the U.S. coming up this fall, but coming up in May, you guys are going to China for the first time.
Yeah, we're going into China, yes. I'm heading to the Shanghai show. I shall be there for that with a couple of masterclasses, and that's going to be... The only thing I can equate it to is probably Tokyo, which was last weekend, and we had 5,000 people in one day, and, I mean, that was incredible. So, big hopes for China, and, you know, hopefully... It'll become a good showcase, as the other Whiskey Lives are, for, you know, whiskey into China, which would be, I know a lot of companies are looking that way, so hopefully we can sort of mirror that demand from the industry and then showcase their whiskeys in the way that we know how, you know.
Whiskey Live New York is scheduled for March 30th, and there are still tickets available. Now, many distillers and bottlers come up with special whiskeys for events like Whiskey Live, but John Glazer of Compass Box went one step further this weekend with a whiskey designed to make people feel good, even in tough times.
Optimism is it is our hopeful antidote to the current global economic malaise. It's a very limited release whiskey. We are bottling by hand at the London Whiskey Live this weekend, February 27th and 28th, and selling it at the festival.
And that's the only place to get it?
It's the only place to get it, yeah. We're going to do about 170 bottles is what we've got. We brought it down in cask. We've transferred it to these 65-liter glass demijohns, and we're going to bottle from there and put the labels on. And if there are any left over after the festival, we might put them on our website, but we figure we'll probably sell them all there.
What's in this one?
The whiskey is I call it a kitchen blend, because there's quite a few different things in there. But the main thrust it comes from two of my favorite distilleries, Kalila and Kleinleash. There is another Islay, pretty big peaty Islay in there as well. About 60% of it is Kleinleash that has spent the last 2 years of its life in French oak. And we've got, as I said, some Kalila and some other, another island there. It is what I call sort of softly smoky. It's not a huge smoky peaty profile, but it's got quite a bit of that character. But all that smokiness and peatiness is enveloped in this rich, lush Northern Highland whiskey with a touch of French oak.
And why the name Optimism?
You know, I'm trying to do my small part to help to help the world, if you will. truly, I mean, I was inspired several weeks back, a couple months ago, by an article Sir David Tang wrote for the BBC, and he was saying pessimism is really one of the greatest enemies, or one of the greatest issues we have with this whole global economic situation at the moment. You know, people get very pessimistic about things, about their personal situation, about their business situation. They tell others to be careful. This pessimism, the media reflects all this, and this can become a doom loop. And his point is simple. The more optimistic we can be about things, the faster we'll pull ourselves out of the situation as individuals, as business people. And I am one of these people who does believe that in adversity you can find opportunity. I truly believe this. It's easier if you're Warren Buffett and you're sitting on lots of cash. But no, for any of us, truly, I think there are always going to be opportunities in times such as these. And with this whiskey, with this name Optimism, we would like to inspire people and remind people to go out there and look for opportunities and be optimistic about the future.
Well, I'm optimistic you'll sell all 170 bottles this weekend.
I'm sure we probably will, because you know what? Everybody's hungry for optimism, particularly here in London, you know, where you know, we are arguably at the epicenter, global epicenter of this whole economic situation.
What else are you working on?
We've got a couple other things. I'm working on a new grain whiskey that hopefully we'll release later in the year. I am working on bringing back Spice Tree in a way that should not bend any noses out of shape. That'll be later this year as well. And as always, you know, lots of projects simmering along.
Okay, so what are you going to do with Spice Tree that doesn't bend any noses out of shape? How are you going to pull it off this time?
You know, I've given you Mark, I've given you a little scoop on that, and you know what? Let's save that discussion for later in the year, once you've got it all together and everything's certain. Let's just say Let's just say for now we're working on it, or we have an intent to bring it back in a way that is will not be seen by anyone as being in any sort of compromising the law in any way, or anyone's interpretation of the law.
Okay, fair enough. Longtime listeners will recall the controversy over the original Spice Tree. He used new toasted French oak staves mounted inside the vintage casks used for blending the Spice Tree, and the Scotch Whiskey Association raised strong objections to what it considered a non-traditional practice. Basically, nothing can be put inside a barrel to influence the taste of a whiskey under Scottish law, and John was forced to stop producing Spice Tree. Now, when he spills the beans and how he's solved that problem, I'll let you know. Finally, I'd like your help in answering a letter from a listener. Jeff Burlatt of Houston posted a note on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. He's heading to Edinburgh in May and considers himself a Scotch novice. He said, "I need to start to learn. What is a good or above average mild peaty Scotch to start with? Also, which Scotches are not available in the U.S. I can bring back? Is it too many to choose?" Well, on the mild peaty Scotch, I suggested maybe Bunahavan or Bruichladdich to Jeff, but you may want to add some suggestions of your own, along with whiskeys that he can bring back that aren't found in the U.S. There's a link at the WhiskeyCast website to the Facebook page. That's also where you can sign up for my Twitter feed and find links for this episode, along with the calendar of events, my updated whiskey ratings, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2009, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.